Let us pray. In the name of Allah, God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise belongs to God, the Lord of the worlds, the Beneficent, the Merciful Master of this day of judgment. Thee do we serve and Thee do we seek for help. Guide us on the right path, the path of those upon whom Thou hast bestowed favor, not the path of those upon whom Your wrath is brought down, nor of those who go astray. Amen.
Yes, yours is you.
In the name of the one God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that He is one, and I bear witness that Abraham, that Moses, that Jesus, that Muhammad are His servants and messengers, and we thank You for joining them in the demand for righteousness and justice. It is in these great names that I greet you with the green words of peace. As-salamu alaykum. How's everyone this afternoon? As I was stating, we just left the town hall to come to the town hall, in that today is the celebration called Little Bobby Hutton Day. And many of our delegates and supporters we just addressed, but they're still meeting as we speak at the West Oakland Library for an event that was scheduled to be hosted at the Frederick Park, but I think weather moved it indoors. By God's grace, we saw a wall-to-wall filled room, including members of the original Black Panther Party. It was such a blessing to hear some of the introductory remarks that I was blessed to see by one of our sisters who joins us on occasion, Sister Tarika Lewis, who is famed for being the first female member of the Black Panther Party. I know her best as my children's music teacher. However, when she shared how prepared and how impactful the work of the Black Panther Party was, it was a wonderful sight to see. It reminded me when she spoke of the breakfast program and when she spoke of the efforts to test, I think, the sickle cell that was established by the Black Panther Party, that they made demands of others to help them in the effort. But whether or not those demands would be satisfied, they moved forward with their projects anyway. One of the problems that communities often have in making demands from institutions of government is not knowing what kind of demand to make. When our brother Oscar was murdered, I'll never forget that fateful day that we met Chief G. And present there, I believe it was Dorothy Duggar, members of the BART board, Lynette Sweeney, Sister Carol Ward Allen, and a few others who hosted us in a small meeting in a conference room at BART that they would attempt to give us the opportunity to quiz Chief G and them about what happened. It was on this very day, while we were sitting with Chief G, that emails began to flurry, which were PDF copies of a letter that Chief G signed seeking support from BART officers and BART employees for Johannes Mezley while he stayed in Santa Rita Jail. We had, before we came in that room, questions, but we didn't know when we got there that we would discover that Chief G was at that time leading the charge to make Johannes Mezley's jail term more comfortable. Well, while we were meeting with Chief G and others, when we concluded that meeting, there was another group coming in for a meeting.
Right.
Well, since we were having the justice meeting, what was the other group coming in for? The other group was coming in for a grant meeting. Not an Oscar grant meeting, but a financial grant meeting. So if we ever wondered why we don't see some faces as involved a year and a half later that were involved a year and a half ago. Sometimes it's because there were those whose greatest desire was not justice for Oscar, but whose larger desires were grants for their own organizations. And what the Panther Party demonstrated was you don't need to wait in order to do a good deed and provide a goodly service for your community. So out of the Panther Party's efforts came what would eventually be known as free breakfast programs or free lunch programs for schools all over the state. That was born out of the effort of the Black Panther Party, who fed hungry children without waiting for the government to offset their feeding efforts. They didn't seek out a 501c3 in order to gain justice. They did what they thought was best, then they executed their plan in a very good way, and they were opposed by the government to the point of being treated as public enemies when in the community they were in fact public friends. Let's give a big round of applause for the Black Panther Party. So in the last few weeks, there are issues that we're certainly getting better acquainted with. Last week's town hall meeting was not here because of calendaring here at the facility, and we met in the Rainbow Recreation Center, which is an alternative site that is made available to us on occasion in East Oakland on Seminary and International Boulevard. When we gathered there, Brother Jack Price had brought with him a family that has been victimized by the recent gang injunctions which have been served in North Oakland. The mother and the son that has been served with this nuisance lawsuit, in essence, that says that he and 18 other people who live or frequent areas in North Oakland are now being sued by the city through the gang injunction. And it suggests that if you're in that area of North Oakland within a certain range of blocks, and if you are in the company of other human beings within a certain range of blocks, and that if you are detained or a suspect of any crime in that area within a certain range of blocks, that this violation of the so-called gang injunction leads to increased reasons for police contact and incarceration. I read in the paper this morning that our friends at the ACLU have now taken on the challenge of the gang injunction in Oakland. By the way, I believe every one of those 19 men that have been served by the gang injunction, I've yet to meet one that's not black. And I think if we go down the list, and I haven't seen the list as of yet, it should be delivered to us soon. There was a special meeting on last Tuesday with some of the families that have been impacted already by this gang injunction, and I would just suppose, call me a racist, everything I see is black. Dave and Christoph are black today. And that's all right with me. But now, here, I would just assume that everybody on that gang injunction list is a black man or woman, mostly male. Now, if we are seeking to gentrify a community, Sister Tariqa mentioned today the old manner of gentrification was called eminent domain. When the government would come and claim a tract of land and use it for some public cause, such as building a BART train. How many people were removed from that community by eminent domain? Reverend Williams was with us today, and one of the issues that he loves to speak to is what happens with public trust
land. What happens when the people that lived there were removed from those lands in order to make some land available to either public or private institutions? Sometimes those lands are given to railroads. When the country was established and the East was connected to the West, it was the railroad industry that helped make that possible. Well, governments gave to the railroad industries not just 5 feet for the track to run through, they gave the railroad industries cities. So when you look at Jack London Square and that port area, all of that came as a result of the deals made with the railroad industries, because the railroad industries needed the track and the port mechanisms in order to move the people and the products. So now when you go into Jack London and other areas like that and you want to rent or lease something, you're dealing with the agency of port and or railway systems. Yes, sir.
The government gives the railroad companies, when they become a state in 1850, they give them 3 miles on each side of the track.
3 miles.
Now, that was, the government just didn't give them land. They give it to them under certain restrictions. They give it to them under a franchise. Okay, but what the railroad did, they wind up selling the property off because all of the politicians lost.
Why not sell all this land that I got for free?
Go
give
ahead.
Me some free land, I'll sell it. How much you want to buy it for? So now, 3 miles.
Yeah, but the
so it's not the track and the rocks and the...
The buildings.
The buildings. Yes. It's 3 miles.
All
how much land is that in a national way? So, thank you, Reverend Williams. I thought I had the history fairly correct, and he just bore me with it.
The franchise was a cheap lease that they were supposed to pay, okay? But they didn't even pay that.
And give their friends cheap leases.
Right.
So the DuPonts could say to the Rockefellers, you build your stuff right here.
So your point is what? I'm trying to get there right now. Because I'm calculating this.
Well, the point that we are
your point, I'm on here.
That we are expecting government to do for us, the poor. But if you really watch, government's greatest desire is to serve the rich. Now, in the murder of Oscar Grant, Bart has made quite a few efforts. We were dealing with gang injunctions, however. And the point that I'm raising is, who has the interest in removing the young urban population and why? We've talked on earlier meetings about gentrification in West Oakland, because West Oakland is the fastest track into San Francisco. That if you were a worker in San Francisco, West Oakland becomes exceedingly attractive. You'll find that housing developments are targeted at these attractive areas, which are now attractive, but some years ago were considered less attractive.
Okay,
and when these agencies or property developers desire these territories, what you'll discover is all of a sudden comes a spike in desire for unreasonable law enforcement methodologies. In West Oakland, sir, 2 years ago, there was a raid at the housing project that included 15 police agencies, 400 officers, military equipment to arrest what was 54 people. And the reasoning given for that was this.
I'm gonna go, man. I gotta go.
It's okay. The reasoning given for that was this: the community is outraged about young people that are on the street, hanging out, spending time, maybe selling a little drugs on a corner here and there. That was the reasoning given for it. Our concern was, if you know that that young person is selling drugs on that corner every day, then you don't need 15 SWAT teams to make an arrest. If a law has been violated, go and do your job as a law enforcement officer and arrest those that violate the law. Whence cometh the 15 SWAT teams? And what was their objective? And when that its effort is followed up with what's called a gang injunction. What that often means is young people that dress alike are now being criminalized. Young people that tattoo alike are now being called criminals. Young people that sing alike are now being called criminals. Now, if police contact is engaged and they see a tattoo on a young person today, if there is a gang injunction, whatever that young person's rights were have just been altered by the presence of a tattoo, graffiti art, coming from a neighborhood, having associates with people from a neighborhood, and quite frankly, that is a violation of the First Amendment rights of all people to, you heard of a, in your First Amendment rights, the right of peaceable assembly? Well, a gang injunction now declares that we cannot assemble. You heard of a right of freedom of speech? That would include your artistry, your dialect, even your sign language. Now, you may not like my sign language. When there are protest movements, such as in the murder of Oscar Grant, some of our friends had up signs that said, curse word, the police. You saw some of those, right? Some put it in songs. Some held up their hands and did it in hand signals, right? And while I don't like being cussed out, you have a right to cuss me out. Now, I'm not a police officer, so be careful. But if you cuss out the police officer, you have not violated the law. He cannot arrest you or she cannot arrest you for cursing at them. You have to actually mandate a threat or issue a threat for them to actually give a kind of response that says that the law has been broken. That happened when Anthony Peroni, this unfortunate character that still works for Bard, when he was questioned by the district attorney that he called Oscar a B word, A word, N word, first thing he said was no. Then he followed that up with, I would never use that kind of language. Sounded like Mark Furman in the OJ case. And the DA already had a tape, just like the OJ case, where the tape was clear that he spoke these words. And then after he heard the words on the tape, Furman said that he must have said it to me first, and I was responding. Well, even if you were, you just lied first. And even if he did say those words, you are trained to hear the words of those that disagree. If an officer pulls you over for a ticket, and they come to your window and say, may I have your license and registration? And you say, what the F you pull me over for? Mm-hmm. Now, that's not good to say. It's not wise if you want to get away from this contact in the most reasonable way. Not a good thing to say. However, you have not violated the law by so saying. Are we together now? Yes. Now, the gang injunction simply causes new reasons for violation of law. Now, you have violated the law because you talked to somebody. You have violated the law because you dressed a certain kind of way in a certain neighborhood. You have violated the law for reasons that are not violations of the law according to the First Amendment. So, yes, we have a problem with gang injunctions, and we appreciate that the ACLU is now taking it to court. On April the 22nd, a judge will begin hearing the arguments of the ACLU against the gang injunction that has been filed in the city of Oakland. It's pretty much universally respected that gang injunctions become a way to legalize racial profiling. And that is in gist our concern with the gang injunction. Now, we want to hear from our friends and colleagues who have taken an action to make sure that BART doesn't feel that it's off the hook for its
murder of Oscar Grant. Our friends went out and made it plain. We appreciate the efforts and are very proud to be colleagues. So I'd like for us to receive to the microphone our friend who last I saw was on the television around Berkeley. Now, I didn't see him on the Oscar Grant, but around Berkeley. Because where injustice is, I think we find Brother Christoph often there. So please receive Brother Christoph as the chair of the actions and the outcomes that we are aware up to this point of the recent grant.
Well, so this action took place at Embarcadero BART station. It was basically planned for about 2 months, and it was planned and telegraphed to BART, telegraphed to the media, that we would gather at Embarcadero Station platform, and that we would have essentially what was a civil disobedience on BART. So we would disrupt their service, and what we were demanding from BART was three things. Two things were fire and charge Tony Peroni. So BART has had Tony Peroni in their employment for a year and a half. This despite the fact that the community has submitted petitions with thousands of signatures, despite the fact that they did two internal affairs investigations, despite the fact that they paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for an independent investigation, which was concluded in August of last year, which set fire Tony Peroni. And a year and a half later, he's still working for BART. You heard about Tony Peroni. He made over $100,000.
That's right.
He's been on paid vacation for a year and a half. He's made over $100,000. That's a reward. Mm. They're rewarding him for what he did. They're showing him they value him. And it's not a coincidence, because the only thing they ever said about Tony Peroni publicly was that he acted professionally and he followed BART protocol. Mm. That's the only thing they've ever said publicly about what he did that night. So, we had a third demand, and that demand was to disband the BART police. That means to get rid of them entirely as an agency. They should not exist. And we think it's pretty clear, for a number of reasons, that BART should not have its own police department. One, the most obvious one, is how they've responded to what happened to Oscar Grant. If you can't fire someone like Tony Peroni for a year and a half, you shouldn't have a police department. If you can't even condemn what he did, if you call what he did professional and protocol, you shouldn't have a police department. If Oscar Grant was the third unarmed black man that BART police shot, you shouldn't get a second chance. So BART should not be trusted with a police department. BART was never meant to be trusted with the police department. And so we basically said enough. Those were our three demands, and we let them know that we were going to disrupt their service on Thursday of last week. And we showed up and we did that. We had about 200 people on the Embarcadero platform, and there were a number of different plans that could have happened with people planning to do civil disobedience that was arrestable. But as it turned out, we had so many people that what we did is something that we called no justice, no rush. So we basically took all 200 people and we started boarding their trains, but we started boarding them real slow. Because BART isn't going to give us justice.
On them trains.
They're not in a rush to give us justice.
That's right.
So we don't need to be in a rush to get on their trains. Mm-hmm. 200 people going through a door, it takes a while.
That's right.
Especially if they're moving slow.
In one door.
You know, chanting, no justice, no rush. No justice, no rush. They got pretty tired of that after a while. We put about a 15 to 20 minute delay in their system, And they started trying to pull people out of doors. They started trying to close the doors on us. They had the train operators closing those doors so no one could get on. And then when people were still moving through them and holding them open, they started trying to pull people out of the doors. One brother was arrested. He went to, he was charged with 3 misdemeanors. He went to San Francisco jail and he got out, cited out. The DA dropped his charges to infractions, so things are okay. I was cited, actually, interestingly enough, on Tuesday of last week, handing out flyers to bar passengers. They cited me for disturbing others on bar train. So handing someone a flyer about what happened to Oscar Grant is disturbing them. But what Tony Peroni did was professional. So anyway, they cited me for that. And they also didn't give their passengers any notice of what was going to happen. That's another thing. So we were telling passengers. Passengers were pretty upset. And it's probably a good thing that we didn't put more of a service disruption into BART's schedule because they didn't know it was coming. But that said, it was BART's responsibility to tell them, and BART did not. So BART wanted to keep our demonstration under wraps at all costs. So they sent out one alert that said there's a civil disturbance in Embarcadero Station and there are delays in the system. That's it. I thought that'd be interesting for you all to know the bit about BART not telling its passengers. Not telling them what happened, not trying to publicize this, because if you ride BART, if you go on BART, you'll know that the moment a train gets late by like 5 minutes, they send out an email and a text message to everybody that signed up for these things called BART alerts. They have a real-time system, so you can get your cell phone signed up, and if the train is late, 5 minutes after that delay, you'll know about it. Okay, but when they know 2 months ahead of time that people are going to disrupt their service, you don't hear a word out of them, nothing, for 2 months. So that's what they're concerned with. They're concerned with their image, and we think this shook them up a little bit. In contrast to previous protests, they had their chief of police out there on the platform, and they mobilized probably close to 100 BART personnel, including their SWAT team. And one of the really amazingly disturbing things that they did was that they brought out one of the officers who was on the platform when Oscar Grant was shot. His name is Emery Knutson, and one of us recognized him. And when that happened, there was a bit of a shouting match. People started to focus their attention on him, and he had to be evacuated from the platform by the SWAT team. But I mean, this is an agency for a year and a half that's been saying it's sensitive, it cares. And meanwhile, they've been paying Tony Peroni $100,000 to sit on his butt and reap the rewards of having murdered somebody. And meanwhile, they're still so insensitive, they're still so out of it, that they'll bring one of the police that's being protested to the protests to tell folks there what to do, to potentially arrest, to potentially beat them. So we're really disappointed, needless to say, in BART, and we're going to continue pressing them. It's likely that we'll hear a decision on Tony Peroni soon. If he is fired, it's still not enough. We still are going to be demanding that Tony Peroni be charged by the DA, and we're still going to be demanding that BART lose its ability to run its own police force.
All right. Question. What if he is charged by arrest?
Charged by?
By arrest. You know, by the peoples, you know what I mean?
A citizen's arrest?
Well, we have the power to, number one, to sue him and take him to a high court.
If you know where he lives.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is, can we get all that information if it's needed?
I know where Dorothy Duggar lives. I don't know where Tony Peroni lives.
To be considered.
Thank you.
Thank you.
activism. It did cost a lot. When Christoph reported 100 officers and personnel there, I believe the Barred Force is about 200 officers.
It wasn't all the police, though. It was the yellow jackets.
Soon to be police. Wannabe, but rental cops. But that kind of force has an expense attached to it.
Yes.
So when you're talking about mounting that kind of force from a military operation, they paid for every base that we saw. Now, on top of that, you talked about the BART PR machine and the text messages or emails. I think I set my phone down somewhere. Here it is. I get them, not necessarily the service reports, but everything that BART government does comes to me from that alert service. And the interesting thing to note, as Christoph stated, was they knew 2 months ahead, because surely every time an announcement goes on indiebay.org, BART has somebody that's paid to read, review, and consider what the ramifications of these activists are in this moment. So they were clear that this day was coming. That's why it was so mounted up with people to respond. I heard Lyndon Johnson declared that, oh, we're well prepared for these kinds of events. We believe in freedom of speech rights, and so we won't interfere with the freedom of speech rights. And he did hint out that Mr. Peroni is probably going to be fired soon, because you don't have to announce that you're keeping him. So any sort of announcement would have to be post-firing as part of his employee right. So if he's staying on the force, I don't see how they could make an announcement. If they're going to excuse him from the force, then an announcement can be made with limitations. And so we'll just watch and see what they do. But while they were doing that, you all remember that BART lost a stimulus package offering from the federal government.
That's right.
And the reasoning for it was the violation of the Civil Rights Amendment of 1965. Well, they came back after losing that stimulus package money and declared that they were going to have something like 17 town hall meetings to say to the public that they may have to change fares and schedules and the like, and they wanted to know how the minority community would be impacted by this. But then they came back the other day after the action, or right around the time of the action, and said, guess what? We're going to lower fares. We know that there's a budget crisis, but we're about to lower fares, and no one is going to be laid off because we've got another opportunity. It's PR. Lower fares. In the budget crisis, I wish they would lower my parking tickets like that. But if you watch the timing of these things, Marisol Domenici was announced to be fired after the plans were being made to disrupt the service. Then the announcement about Mr. Peroni, then the announcement that they have a way now, all of a sudden, to lower fares, when last month they were talking about increasing fares. So you're looking at a master PR machine. Ms. Duggar wants to keep her job, and she doesn't want to lose it by public pressure. Let me just say that public pressure is needed.
Yes.
And that if we really examined the benefits of rights that many people have gained, they have never been gained without public pressure. We were at UC Irvine the same day that the action was taking place. Oscar's mother, Sister Wanda, Brother Jack, myself, and attorney Jamon Hicks from the Johnny Cochran firm sat together on a panel. We took with us our Sister Vivian, who is part of our town hall and managed, along with Sister Erica, in the earlier days, our information distribution system through our Ministry of Information. Sister Vivian is now a law student at UC Irvine. And so let's give her a big round of applause. And her activism here and her activism continued when she got to UC Irvine. And so they hosted us with about 200 students that came out to learn about the murder of Oscar Grant. And what we can take for granted is this. We think everybody knows because we know. We think everybody has seen the footage because we've seen it so often. When we make it down to the law students and the Black Student Union and the other organizations that hosted this event, most of these students had not seen the video footage and knew very little about Oscar Grant. It was their advocacy of what happened that encouraged the students to come. Sister Vivian found the campus radio station, and they interviewed us a few days before we arrived there so that the student body could hear about the case of Oscar Grant. And when we arrived, the room we were in wasn't big enough for the demand of people that wanted to come. The students were very moved to support our efforts for justice for Oscar Grant. That is to say that we've come and are growing into a time not only of local mobilization, but there is in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Coalition for Justice for Oscar Grant. Some of them were present and invited us to come back down on another date for activities surrounding Southern California organization. But the beauty here was the students. The students felt compelled to involve themselves in knowing the issue and participating in it. They wouldn't let us leave. We almost missed our flight. Talking to students after the event was over because they wanted to know what they could do. These were undergrad students. These were law students. These were persons from the area of Irvine, from Long Beach, California, and other communities that are anxious. In fact, after that brother dropped us off, Brother Jack, and we almost missed that plane, after we made a few wrong turns, he called me back, and I just listened to the voicemail. We were on the plane to say that they're so excited that they're going now into Long Beach to spread the word, and said to me, make sure that you keep us aware of the schedule of events and activities because we want to not only bring you all back to Long Beach, but we want to make sure everybody is aware and informed about what happened with Oscar Grant and how to organize for justice. So let's give those students a round of applause. We very much appreciate their activism. In the time we have remaining, I'd like to see if Jack would like to share anything. Of course, Wilson, if there's anything that you would like to share, we're on a limited schedule today, so we'll have to get it out before the church has it.
June 1st, trial starts, and then June 16th on the same floor. It's very important that we promote this because Michael Jackson's pretrial starts in the same courthouse, and his motion is going to be.
So the public attention, in fact, the courtroom that we're in is made for these high-profile cases, and I think we've described it on occasion that it requires two security checks to get in, requires a lottery ticket in order to find a seat if you're not a member of the family of Mesley or Oscar. So it's a very difficult process. You're looking at not one law enforcement agency managing, but two. You've got LAPD on the sidewalk and LA sheriffs on the inside, LAPD in the hallways, LA sheriffs inside the courtroom. It's a sight to see. Now, when we arrived there toward the end of the trial, which the judge estimated to go about 3 weeks, the Michael Jackson doctor's case, or the doctor of Michael Jackson has been accused of, I don't know what the crime is, that they're charging him with, but you know the case, right, for the medication. That trial will begin around the time that the Oscar Grant murder trial will end, which gives us the opportunity to, after learning the results or witnessing progress, that to make our demands known, God has just given us a bigger forum, bigger than we could have imagined, because this is the type of courtroom that when that case comes, there'll be nowhere to park because the press will have taken all the parking spaces. It's going to look like that in Southern California at the end of Oscar's trial. And so we certainly know
that our friends in Southern California are well able to organize, but our duty by them becomes not only to mobilize from here to there, but to make sure that the details that we know are known there. When we talk about what happened in the hearings here, the arguments that arose here, the political changes that have occurred and are occurring here, well, here's what Jamon Hicks told us after hearing our testimony. He as an attorney in the Johnny Cochran firm, said that he receives 100 calls a week from different potential clients to complain about police brutality and police abuse issues. He said that with that, if you do the math, that's over 5,000 incidents in a year in one city or one area. He said that with all the cases that he has been involved with, we're talking about a man that has potential to see 5,000 clients a year. He said out of all of the cases that he's ever been involved with, he has never seen one police officer disciplined. Did he say never? He said never. Now, we met a family while we were down for one of the trial dates, the family of Devondre Brunston. He was shot over 80 times on video by the LA Sheriff Department, by their own cameras, which before they shot him, he said to them, I know you're videotaping. Something of that effect. They sucked police dogs on him, and he took off a shoe or had a shoe in his hand, and he was threatening like he had perhaps a weapon, but they knew he didn't have a weapon. And when the dog rushed him, he threw the shoe at the dog. When the officers saw him throw that shoe at the dog, they opened fire, what they call contagious fire, and they emptied out I don't know how many weapons, killing Devondre Brunston and the dog. Well, I don't know if they killed the dog.
They killed the dog.
And they killed the dog. They picked the dog up and rushed it away on a helicopter to be treated and left Brother Brunston to lay there and die, and talked about him like a dog as he lay there and bled to death on camera. Now, all of this is on camera. Why haven't we seen it? Well, how do you spell corporate media? Why doesn't many people have a thorough knowledge of the facts of the murder of Oscar Grant? Because the corporate media restricts it. We shared with the students there how when Anthony Peroni, in testimony, was cornered into admitting that he called Oscar the B word, the A word, and the N word, that it was more than 2 weeks before any press picked it up, and that a member of the press requested of me that I and we here should have a press conference to tell everybody what Tony Peroni said. And I said to that respected member of the press, why do I have to have a press conference and you are in the courtroom? Why don't you just report what you saw? In fact, why don't you take the report to Dorothy Duggar and ask her what is her response to what Anthony Peroni said? And in words, I'm an employee of this network. I can't just pursue a story. They've got to send me on the story. Then Mateer and Ross, 2 weeks later, gets the credit like they dug up something that we all saw in the courtroom where we could barely find a seat because we were fighting with the press for seats inside the courtroom. All of the press refused to report the egregious words of Anthony Peroni, isn't it?
And that was the last anyone wrote of it in the press.
And they haven't repeated.
And?
Yes.
The Chronicle published an article about our action. Every one of our flyers has Tony Peroni
and
has that information on it. They reported, the San Francisco Chronicle reported, the reason that we are upset at Peroni is because he was on the platform. because he was on the platform when Oscar Grant was shot, they didn't bother to say anything
that he was responsible
about, that he was responsible for, about the attacks, about the violence, about the slurs, nothing. That he was on the platform as if we're somehow, oh, he just happened to be there, and so we were going to blame him too. That's the Chronicle. And when they were confronted about it, a friend of mine wrote a letter back in. He responded, and the response from the reporter was, oh, you know, we can't put everything in our stories. We can't put everything in our stories.
And by not saying that, they didn't put anything in the stories.
They left out the whole reason we were protesting.
I saw a hand up. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for you, Christoph.
Yes.
The things you do really make an impact, you know, like the thing you did with Bart, are you ever harassed?
Well, like I said, I was arrested. I'm not arrested, I was cited by two BART police 2 days earlier for handing out flyers. So to some degree, yes, but the other side is once you, I guess, once they know who you are, I don't know. I don't get harassed. I don't get harassed that much, no. I wouldn't consider it that much.
Yeah, because you, what you do is you look for the other side. You know, other side meaning us. Black people, injustice, well, just period. You know, and I was just wondering how that works.
I wouldn't consider myself to get harassed too much. I do get, it's not really about me, but I do get harassed. I do get emails and, you know, people contact my work and tell them to fire me and things like that. I don't know if that counts.
And anyone that stands for justice,
but
will receive a repercussion.
But I mean,
and none of us can escape that.
Yeah.
Be it Dave, Christoph, you, or me, all of us are subject to that. But I think Kelly Abraham, when we were in San Francisco State, it was something she crafted that is accurate, something she said that is accurate. She said when they do their cop watch work, she's well aware that as a Caucasian woman, that the reaction of law enforcement with her difference, and that she's aware that if black men did some of the things that she was doing, that there'd be a different kind of reaction from law enforcement. I think Christoph is sharp enough to know that
we see that too.
There's some privileges,
I mean,
that you can have even in activism.
So the one person they chose to arrest the other day was a person of color. You know,
I saw that.
And they also, I mean, I don't know if you all know Hannibal.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, they. It's, I think it's ingrained in officers. I think it's ingrained that they can lay hands on somebody. If it's a person of color, then they can lay hands on that person.
Was Hannibal arrested?
Hannibal was grabbed.
No, but they took his backpack at one point,
too. And they stole his backpack. They literally took his backpack off of him on camera.
Yes, sir.
And held it, and he asked them for it back. They refused to give it to him.
So we wasn't aware of that.
We had to stake them out for a while. But I mean, no, I don't face as much repercussions. A lot of that has to do with, like, it does have to do with my race. It has to do with the fact that I'm white, and they don't think, or they're trained to think they can't get away with it. And I'll add something if I can.
Yes, sir.
I live in North Oakland. I've lived there for 10 years.
They didn't serve you with a gang injunction?
They did not serve me with a gang injunction, no. But yesterday I saw on the street, on Telegraph, four very well-dressed white women standing outside of a restaurant, and all of them had glasses of wine. And they were lounging around on Telegraph Avenue, right at Telegraph and 51st, drinking wine like they're on their porch at Walnut Creek. Right? Just lounging around. And, you know, North Oakland has never had as many police driving through it in the last 10 years as it has in the last year. They patrol all the time. They drive by. They see this. I mean, it's literally the restaurant has moved onto the sidewalk. This is not, you know, not a sign seeing. This is just people that came out of the restaurant with their wine glasses in hand and are drinking on the street. And I think everybody knows what would happen if those were young black men drinking on the sidewalk. But there's not a police officer in Oakland that would stop them. And it's not because he couldn't, you know, in court the judge would say, no, it's legal for you to drink on the sidewalk. It's because if he arrested them, The owners of those restaurants would call to the city, would call in the city council. City council would call in to the police department, and they would get a back channel reprimand like you never believed. You know, because they'd be messing up the business of these restaurants by harassing their clients. But when it's black men, when it's youth, when it's people who aren't perceived to have privilege, then they'll crack down. So I mean, it's the same thing, I think, with activism. They'll allow activism if it's perceived as, you know, well-meaning white individuals can get away with stuff, right? It's privilege. It's just straight up privilege, and that's how it works. And it's not right.
That's right.
Definitely not right.
Let me just say in closing, as the church staff will be coming in just a moment, Minister Farrakhan was actually asked a question in a radio interview about this kind of activism, not necessarily the BART train act, but activism generally as a principle. He was asked, is this a time for mass mobilization? Do we need something like that now? His answer was, yes, we do need mass mobilization. Do you remember Caravan for Justice?
Yeah.
And of course, all the rallies that brought attention to the murder of Oscar Grant, the efforts that we made going into the BART government meetings and city government meetings, all these things were necessary. For if none of these things were done, then nothing will have been done. So when Attorney Hicks said in Southern California, out of the thousands of cases that he has seen, not a single one has resulted in discipline, suspension, termination, or charges being brought. Not one. Well, then we owe a great debt of gratitude for the many men, women, and children that have been making such strong demand. It's really just a question of timing. They take too long, no doubt about it. But there are certain things that have happened in this case that have not happened in the history of the state. So for that, give all of yourselves a big round of applause. Stand and mobilize. And mobilizing is not done. Because as we're speaking, they're ratcheting up the efforts at criminalization of young people in the community, which is why there's this thing called the gang injunction. As we are speaking, they've run out of money for education, but they seem to always have enough money to keep a man in jail. So these and other issues demand our constant, ongoing attention. The monies that are spent to incarcerate and the dollars that are spent to prosecute war. I read a piece today that said that America has spent, I don't remember, it was either 400 million or 400 billion to effect regime change in Iran. Billion. $400 billion to stoke up, if they can get away with it, a civil war inside another country. Now, for this country to declare that it has a deficit while spending $400 billion to bother some people that have not bothered them.
Well,
it'd be different if Iran declared war on America or had done something that warranted that kind of response. But $400 billion to bother them and their political lives? Yet to tell you there's not enough money to educate your children. And if that is the manner and method of engaging Iran, then how much are they spending with similar engagements in other countries? How many hundreds of billions of dollars have been wasted in Iraq? How many hundreds of billions of dollars have been wasted in Nicaragua? How many hundreds of billions of dollars are being wasted in Venezuela? How many hundreds of billions of dollars are being wasted in Palestine? How many hundreds of billions of dollars are being wasted in Nigeria? How many hundreds of billions of dollars are being wasted and targeted at Cuba? How many hundreds of billions of dollars are being wasted at Haiti?
Yeah.
Let me close on this one.
Dr. Tosco has gone to Haiti now more than once. One of our doctors from the Nation of Islam also went. And Dr. Tosco told us when she reported out here that as she was preparing to go and she contacted the Black National Medical Association, I think it's called the NMA, National Medical Association, that someone in the White House, she said, told them not to go and help those that were suffering from that earthquake. Brother Aleem Muhammad, the National Minister of Health for the Nation of Islam, went, and he also heard that there had been some advisement from somebody, whoever that is, from the White House saying to the doctors, Black doctors, don't go to Haiti. Dr. Aleem reported, he was in Port-au-Prince, Dr. Tosco was in a neighboring city somewhere, that he was the only Black American doctor in the area where he was. He didn't see another Black doctor. It was just him. Well, among the problems we have on occasion is we don't know our own rights to the degree that when someone in the White House says to Black doctors, don't go, the first question should have been, who are you? Who gave you the right to tell me where I can and cannot go? So Dr. Aleem and Dr. Tosco just both made a demonstration of what free people look like. Don't tell me somebody in the White House told you not to go. Who? And if you say it was President Obama, then he's got my phone number. If he wants to tell me not to go, he can call and tell me himself, and then we can dialogue on whether or not we've got the freedom and the right to go and serve people that are dying from an earthquake.
Right.
But they know with many who rely on grants in that nonprofit industry and relationships that to offend that office is considered a no-no if you want to retain your grants and certain kinds of relationship. Well, the best yes is to be free. And we'll find that those in those offices respect us much better when we're free than when we are enslaved to our fears. And so we're grateful that our church has given us so much flexibility here. I do know that there's an event, there was a funeral in here right before we arrived, and there's something else coming in as we depart. Reverend Williams has given me plans that he's preparing to march for justice across the Bay Bridge, candlelight vigil from Oakland to San Francisco, Saturday, April the 24th. Next Saturday, we'll give Reverend Williams the time he needs to share with us in greater detail, as we'll have more time on next Saturday to really deal with it in gist. It's Tariq. Yes, sir.
Don't make this going to be bad for you.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
This is justice not only for reparation, but it's for justice for all the things that we need. Money, our homes, and justice to stop the violence, the killing. Okay, justice for Oscar Grant. You know, so anybody can join in with this and make their own flies. You know what I mean? You don't have to have one look like that. I got another fly with Oscar Grant on, justice for Oscar Grant on it. You know what I mean? But it's just time for us to connect together. You know what I mean? Now we have a bill. I just left Washington D.C. 2 weeks ago. Okay, so the Teamsters sent their deputy director down to the National Mall to help me take care of all the business we got to take care of there for the weekend of the Juneteenth weekend, okay? Now, but we still got to fill out everything for our application, you know, like the stage, the PA system, security and all of that, and food and water and all of that. You know, the team doesn't help sponsor this. They don't have to spend the money in Washington, D.C. Have to be spent. But how that you all can help is also by emailing to Caltrain. We're not sure what we, this application, they're going to accept it or going to pass it yet. But calls or emails to Caltrain to support this would be a blessing, okay, for anyone like to have a fly, I'd certainly give it. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you for all the wonderful work you've done.
Thank you.
Would you
pray as I do, Pastor? As our pastor is preparing to give us prayer, just a reminder of Haiti. We're very thankful, Sister Judy and others, that have been organizing the collections, which have been shipped out, I believe, already. We heard from our National Minister of Health, Abdul Ali Muhammad Singh, brother, and we're still collecting, and there'll be other tracks. I think Minister Farrakhan has talked about sending 2 plane loads if we have to get the planes ourselves into Haiti. So keep your mind on what you can collect, and soon we'll be sharing where the items that you offer are to be delivered. I think Brother Aleem Muhammad talked about how significant something as simple as a tent would be for people when you consider, I think, 75% or more of that capital city is in Rome. So he talked about how much help we could provide even if we were able to provide enough tents. And he mentioned a raw number, and we'll deal with that in a future meeting, of actual tents that would bring people in from the inclement weather season, which has already arrived, I believe, or is arriving soon in Haiti for many persons who are still sleeping on the street. I will say this, that he shared the fact that the U.S. military arrived in Haiti one day before the earthquake. And I guess a good question is why. And that Haiti is now under military, U.S. military control. And the question is why? And the fears that people are given about wild Haitians in the streets attacking one another out of suffering and poverty, well, those fears are not justified. And he brought back to us the images of the Haitian people proudly surviving the storm and helping one another through the difficulty. We owe it to them to offer our aid, but we are certainly clear that the aid that the people need does not best come to Haiti through George Bush nor from Bill Clinton. He also shared that the Clinton family recently came into ownership of some of the main utilities, I think the phone system, in Haiti. So there's personal interest here, that's my point. They recently discovered oil in Haiti. Well, the Bush family came to wealth in the oil industry. Just be mindful of what you're looking at, so that the policies that came out of the Bush and Clinton administrations demonstrated that they were never a friend of Haiti. So to find them to be the face of fundraising for Haiti, just be careful. Which is why we made our direct connections to those that are working on the ground to support the needs of those that are in Haiti, so that we don't have to worry about our dimes marching in a direction that we have no idea who they're going to support. And so learn all that you can. There's much more that we could share. But God willing, soon we will return to some of our focus at Haiti so that the community can be properly informed about what life has become and what is most needed there in the country of Haiti as it rebuilds. Please receive Reverend Wayne to close us out.
Lord God, our Father, we come thanking and praising you, Lord, on this great day, Lord, for this great meeting, Lord. Lord, we ask you to continue to bless us, Lord, and take care of us, Lord. Pray, our Father, that you would bless our community, Lord. Bless not only our community, Lord, our city, our country, Lord, and just bless all of the people, Lord, today that's in need, Lord. Pray, our Father, you bless Minister Mohammed here, Lord, and just bless him and take care of him and his family, Lord. Bless all of the committed peoples here and all of the working peoples here, Lord. Lord, that is doing great work here, Lord, around the Oscar Grant case, Lord, and his family, Lord. And we praying for the Oscar Grant family, Lord. Continue to bless them, Lord, and keep them strong, my Father.
and pray, our Father, you bless the restitution and reparation movement, Lord. Bless this march across the Bay Bridge, Lord. Bless it to happen. Bless people to come forward and join in, Lord. Lord, and let's make this a great day. Oh, Lord, in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Next Saturday, 4 o'clock.